ever since folks started posting content on the internet, there have been folks pretending to be someone they're not. Con artists, catfishers, and even digital blackface has made the internet a terrible place. Black Twitter identities have been stolen or made up to thwart civil rights conversations. But digital blackface also extends to how non-black users prefer to use reaction GIFs featuring black women to express their most exaggerated emotions.
Don't worry, no one's coming for your NeNe Leakes GIFs yet. But on today's show, we are asking, are you coming for them correct? Joining us is comedian Colette Gregory to take a look at racism and comedy on the internet and why some folks rely a little bit too much on their favorite sassy black women GIFs to express themselves online.
Plus, why not in front of my salad has us all hungry for more.
Obama Day is now an official state holiday in Illinois.
And Cate Blanchett is set to play Lucille Ball in a new biopic. Meanwhile, Lucy's hometown of Jamestown, New York, is becoming the home of the National Comedy Center. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
Right now, you have Feast of Fun in your ears because for the last 13 years, a listener just like you took the time to support this one-of-a-kind, in-depth programming. If you like the show, please make a donation at feastoffun.com/donate. And if you didn't like the show, make a donation anyway to help us improve.
In the musical Dreamgirls, in the scene where Effie White is having the big confrontation with her co-stars and her boyfriend Curtis, Curtis turns to Effie and says, "You think a star is a king? Well, wake up, baby. A star is a slave." And I had this dream about 6 months ago where I'm in a where they hold dead bodies, what's that called?
A funeral. A morgue.
Not mm-hmm. a morgue, it was a
funeral home, an embalming parlor, a graveyard.
A graveyard.
My backyard.
Wait,
the cellar.
With RuPaul, I'm talking to RuPaul, and RuPaul's like, "Your time has come." And I'm like,
"Well, that is scary."
And I'm like, it's, you know.
RuPaul the Reaper?
It was kind of, yeah. RuPaul's like, you know, I was like,
"What was she wearing?"
It was, "Is it time to be on Drag Race or time to die?" And is it too late to be on? And he looks at me and he's like, "It's never too late."
Aw, so Fosso, you're just saying you're going to be on season 10?
Yeah, probably.
But you think heard about it here first, guys.
And the reason I wanted to start off this podcast talking about this stuff is because for a lot of gay men, especially white gay men, I think that our relationship to culture and black culture is really, really complicated. Our guest today is comedian Colette Gregory, who just quit her day job.
Hey.
And is now a full-time comedian mm-hmm. touring around the world, mm-hmm. Entertaining
so
people.
To the industry now.
So you think you were going to be a queen? Well, wake up, baby.
Thanks, guys.
You're a slave to the joke factory.
From the joke factory.
Thank you so much.
Welcome to Feast of Fun. So there's a new, you know, and there's a lot of these social justice advocacy articles appear on the internet from time mm-hmm. to time, and they become big deals because mm-hmm. everybody starts talking about them. And latest, Teen Vogue has one about the way white gay men, or just, this is mostly like,
just white people in general.
White people in general use black women mm-hmm. and their animated GIFs.
Right. So the article in Teen Vogue, which is on the cutting edge of everything these days, gender identity, the kids are all into it. Who would have thought, you know, that Teen Vogue would have transformed into something that's fighting the patriarchy and Trump and all these
We got to get them when they're young. We got to, you know, brainwash them now. So when the next Trump comes up, they know not to vote for him.
For sure. For sure. And so there's an article out now by Lauren Michelle Jackson says, "We need to talk about digital blackface in reaction GIFs." So, you know, they've talked a lot before in the past, and people have mentioned digital blackface when you kind of pretend like you're a black person, and they've used a lot of that to kind of disrupt like the Black Lives Movement. Mm-hmm. They've been some people that pretend like they're black, and then they use Twitter to be like, "I don't know why can't people just be people?" And you know,
but unfortunately, they decide
too.
To use, you know, terrible English and mm-hmm. Ebonics and AVEE to do that because mm-hmm. they want to make sure that you know that they're really black people.
What's AVEE?
Oh, okay, that's African American Vernacular. English.
Okay. That's a nice way of saying Ebonics.
Yes, okay. Yeah, that was the classy way to do it. Yeah, you know, using that Ivy League education, hire me.
to explain some of the rules, because I actually read an article about it in Streetwise magazine in the 90s. So instead of saying the coffee is cold, if you're using A-V-E-E, you would say the coffee cold, right? Because linking verbs.
We ain't got time for that.
Don't use the linking verbs. Double negatives actually are not the opposite of them. It actually means emphasis.
You're doubling down.
So the coffee is ever cold, you know. That would mean that the coffee is hot.
Don't never do that, right?
And that's pretty much like, you know,
don't.
Thank you. Yes. That's a great example. Are there any other kind of rules? Like, there's a whole lot of videos about that.
You know, the interesting thing about that is they discover that as languages become used by other people and they become bigger, that a lot of the things that they have in the language that are superfluous that you don't need fall out. So if you look at it in Chinese, they don't really use any of those articles, and then they use a lot of those, like the Chinese would say coffee cold, because they don't use that because their language. It's implied, and their language started with a small group of people and then grew to, you know, how many people speak Chinese? A billion years. So the people that started taking up the language dropped all that stuff. And so you'll probably see a lot of that stuff happen in English. And then also, too, you know, in an English language, we stress things. So we'll be like, the coffee is cold, because we want to emphasize that it's really cold. And then other people will just kind of, in some languages, they'll just repeat things twice.
And so the gist of Lauren Michelle Jackson's article in Teen Vogue is what exactly?
So what she's trying to say is that to be very aware of how you use these reaction GIFs featuring African-American people, because as she says that they use it as a way for white and non-black users to use these GIFs to use exaggerated emotions. So if you're doing extreme joy, annoyance, anger, and on occasions for drama and gossip, that you use black people for it because you don't have enough the resource for it to suggest that, and that
so use African, your words, Effie.
Yes, and so that African.
What is that? What? I'm sorry. Which movie is that? Use your words. What the
parents say that to children?
No, but there's a movie. That's a quote from one of the movie with. But
no, it's drink your juice, Shelby.
And drink your juice, Shelby, but use your words, baby.
Yeah. No, that's what people say to the kids, I think. Okay, maybe it's from a movie. Yeah. Google it real quick.
But keep going.
What they're trying to say is that, you know, we're using this because of the way that African Americans are viewed in society, is that they're viewed as being overly exaggerated, overly emotional, and that somebody, you know, could be very calm and collected. Let's take an example of those African American women that were riding on that wine train through the wine country, and they were told to be quiet, and they were just like, we're just talking amongst ourselves, we're not being any louder than anybody else.
So Colette, what's your thoughts on this specific article and other types of social justice advocacy articles in general?
Yeah, you know, as an African American woman, I was very torn in my thoughts about this article. It's an opinion piece, so I think that's a definite place to start. So it's not like someone did, you know, extensive research or talked to all these academics and said, this is definitely what's happening. Like, this was someone's opinion piece. So like when I initially saw it, I was like, oh, Teen Vogue, like you're being like a little extra, like digital blackface. And I think my initial
extra means what exactly? Well, I was trying to clarify here.
Yeah,
right?
your extra means that you're doing too much, that you might be reaching in your interpretation of a situation. And I was super concerned about that because Teen Vogue has been killing it. You know, they're teaching kids about masturbation. They're teaching kids about anal sex. That article came out a couple weeks ago and the internet was up in arms. But they're trying to be a source of conversations that kids aren't getting anyplace else. So I was worried that they were going to kind of damage their platform by doing this piece, which I feel like is reaching to an extent. And I felt that because blackface is a real thing that does have real implications in the world. And blackface, you know, happened years ago. People were exaggerating black features, you know, wearing big lips, darkening their skin with till it was actually the color black.
You're talking about the history of cinema.
The history in minstrel shows.
In vaudeville and in films like Al Jolson, the jazz singer.
But in the touring says the vaudeville.
Yeah. And those things had real implications because they were using the worst stereotypes of black people and then showing that to millions of people and perpetuating that.
These gifts don't do that?
Well, here's my thing. Mm-hmm. Those gifts are people who are black themselves, mm-hmm. who are choosing to be in the public eye and oftentimes make money off of those catchphrases that people then Google them for. I think about like Sheree Whitfield from Real Housewives of Atlanta, who has like, "Who gonna check me, boo?" Well, she's out there selling "Who gonna check me, boo" t-shirts. So people are trying to create these catchphrases so that they can be household names mm-hmm. and make money off of these. People are, you know, making their own emoji keyboards and t-shirts and logos and branding from these things. And so since this was an opinion piece, this person who wrote this article didn't talk to those people and ask them how they felt about it and didn't recognize their own autonomy in the situation. So
I think a lot of like black entertainers don't want to deal with something as controversial as this. Mm-hmm. What, NeNe Licks is just, she's busy worrying about her brand, and her mm-hmm. brand is not about alienating people with money.
Yeah. And I think also when you're building a brand and you have crossover appeal to entertainers, that's a positive. So if people are using these in their text messages and in their Facebook posts, and these are people who don't look like you and have not ever really interacted with people who look like you, that's a crossover appeal. And like, that's a positive. I think the issue comes if like people are talking that way to black people in real life. If one of these little girls who send these emoji out comes up to me and is like, "Who gonna check you, boo?" To me, I'm gonna check her, boo. That's who's gonna check you, you know? So I think recognizing, as the author says, like these things don't happen in a vacuum. So that's mm-hmm. a conversation that needs to be said. But I would rather her talk about the digital blackface that you were talking about. Mm-hmm. You know, these people going on the social justice sites and being trolls and making up fake black profiles.
I was just reading something. It was like, so there was a girl, she's in college. They appropriated her identity and had a Twitter account in her thing. And
she's the Trump thing, right?
And she's like, she was like
just
pro-Trump.
Retweeted by Trump. Yeah.
And Nicole Mincy.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. also too is like, you know, she's like I'm mad because they stole my identity and it's pro Trump and they're trying to use my identity to sell his merchandise.
Exactly. So they're using this young black woman mm-hmm. trying to perpetrate that she is a supporter of Trump, having Trump retweet alleged tweets from her that mm-hmm. have now been linked to possibly a Russian bot. Like, to me, that's more problematic because that's like identity theft. That is trying to get, you know, people to think that Trump has black supporters.
Well, besides Diamond and Silk.
Right.
Two of the most amazing video bloggers is Diamond and Silk.
Yes.
I know, that's right.
And maybe Diamond and Silk, you know, are getting paid to be endorsing Trump. Yeah. Or their parents ran like a fraudulent herbal supplement company that sold supplements that actually didn't have the herb that they were supposed to.
It was like snake oil sales.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they believe they were also pastors of a church and then sold like that kind of like herbal something supplement on the side.
And they had a cable access TV show where they sold the supplements and stuff like that. So Diamond and Silk, like they seem really fun mm-hmm. based on the YouTube videos, but they have a history of conning people, mm-hmm. which is, you know, makes it very appropriate that they were like the two black women mm-hmm. in media when Trump was running for president that were like on stage with him endorsing him.
Yeah. So I think that I would rather see Teen Vogue talk about that because they've established themselves, or they're trying to establish themselves as big in the social justice advocacy field. Mm-hmm. And those are real issues versus like some teen sending a GIF out. And
what I liked about the article is it kind of like just makes you kind of think about these GIFs in a different way for a white person. Like, you might not be aware of this. So kind of think about this. And this is how it may be interpreted from time to time. Mm-hmm. And also, too, is if you're always using reaction GIFs and they're always featuring black people, mm-hmm. you really might want to think about where your head is at.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it's absolutely appropriate to use something like that, but mm-hmm. other times you might be like, you might be walking the line there.
I mean, mean, anything that gets white people to question their privilege, I'm behind. anything that makes you stop for a moment and be like, am I being racist? Like, I support that.
Stop, drop, and roll. If you think you're on fire.
Yes, hunty. Stop, death drop.
Death and drop roll. And roll.
Yeah.
The early days of the internet, and to this day, has a lot of people who, you know, especially entertainers, who white gay men who take on black female personas.
And straight ones. You know, our friend Jeffrey J was on a podcast. He was the third of a podcast called Two Black Women Talking or something. And it's like
Two black women.
It was two white guys. And we're like, Jeffrey, what the fuck?
And we were on the show and we're like, please stop using this.
I know we're everything. You know, as Maxine Waters said, like, I know I'm great. you know, so
Maxine Waters actually said that?
Yes. Oh, yes. That's before she did the Reclaiming My Time. Yeah,
that's the part when she started doing the Reclaiming My Time, because she's telling the Secretary of the Treasury, she's just like, don't waste my time telling me I'm wonderful. You know,
I already know that I'm great.
I'm reclaiming my time, so shut up.
And so, you know, what about Shirley Q. Licker? Because, you know, and I think about this is why I always give this theory that RuPaul is an anarchist. If he can make things more complicated and more and stir the pot, he's going to do that. And his endorsement, his friendship with Chuck Knipp, a Canadian nurse who created this, black female character in the early days of the internet called Shirley Q. Licker, and actually recorded an album with him, really was unnerving and disturbing and for that. And then the same album, RuPaul has a whole song called The N-Word, where the N-Word is all the lyrics.
That's the only lyric, is it?
And I think RuPaul is like trying to make sense, is trying to make art with these taboos, these difficult things. I asked my mother, and there's something happening here that's really complicated, which is, as comedians, as entertainers, we want to take a look at painful, difficult, fucked up shit and make art about it, make us think about it. And comedy is also a way of processing things that are dangerous and harmful to us. And when I was a kid, I got my hands on Blanche Knott's Truly Tasteless Jokes, which is full of horrific racist jokes in them. And one of them has a whole chapter dedicated to dead baby jokes. And I asked my mother, I was like, why do I find these jokes funny? And why are these jokes even being made? And she said, maybe it's because it's a prayer, hoping that never happens to you. And the reason you're laughing at it is because of the outrageousness of the horrors. May I read some dead baby jokes? This is a trigger for some people who have had a baby die.
Trigger warning.
This is actual trigger warning. So how many babies fit in a blender? Depends on how powerful the blender is.
It's not funny.
What's funnier than a dead baby? A dead baby in a clown costume. See, you are laughing.
I'm making a conscious choice to not laugh in order to protect my brand.
To protect your brand. What is the difference between a baby and an onion? No one cries when you chop up a baby. And, you know, and people are like,
those were big jokes in the 80s, especially among kids. Kids really thought they were really funny.
Like, and, how young?
Like, I remember, like, when I was probably, you know, in grade school or something, when those things came out.
And so, like,
it was that and the leper jokes. What do you call four lepers in a hot tub?
What?
Soup. What'd the leper say to the hooker? Sex worker, I'm sorry. Keep the tip.
Oh, now, so leper is leaper or leper the pejorative term? Is there like a more...
Well, they suffer from leprosy.
A person of leper experience.
You're going to modernize the leper.
Afflicted with...
And leprosy is one of those things, like, it still happens in the world. Usually it's from malnutrition, and so then you get a bacteria, I believe, that starts eating away at your flesh.
And it's very popular with Bible movies with Bible stories. So how do we, like, you know, let's think about, like,
because you brought up the comedian, what is it, Party Girls or Party Trip?
So it's Girls Trip. And there's Tiffany Haddish, who was asked, you know, who is one of your comedic inspirations? And she said Bill Cosby. And then she said, you know, I would still love to work with him. Like, I'll drink the juice. I'll take a nap. I'm not scared. And then, you know, it was later revealed that she actually was a victim of sexual assault herself. And so I've been thinking a lot because I do, you know, I was a therapist and I do a lot of like violence prevention work. Like, why would someone who's a victim of sexual assault make a joke about that? And I think that it's a way of like kind of taking back some of your power. You know, it's a way of processing what happened to you. A lot of times we laugh instead of crying, but also a way of taking back your power, talking about things in a way that we usually can't talk about. So here's a way of like introducing the subject in a way that's like a little bit safer and a little bit more socially accepted. And I think a lot of root of like dead baby jokes and leper jokes and racist jokes and rape jokes come from that. Like, how do we have these discussions? Because people's like already your butthole tenses up, right? When you bring up these topics. So it's a way of like talking about those things. And the issue is when it like punches down, right? When it is, you know, victim blaming or is, somehow like in Tiffany's joke, it's kind of, elevating the alleged rapist, and saying that like, you know, I still look up to him. I would still work with him. But
it sounds like some people that have issues they're still working out, you know, like when you see a comedian, they're like, I'm being edgy and stuff, and you're like, sounds like you need a, you know, go see a therapist or, you know, get somebody to give you a hug.
Both, right? Girl, yeah. Comedian therapy.
You need some hug therapy or something.
A lot of comedians kind of use their comedy as a way to kind of do therapy, don't they?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, it is a skill that you develop in order to, like, deflect attention off of you. So, you know, if you're always telling the jokes, if you come in a room, we were talking about this earlier, if you come in a room and you're, like, entertaining that room and you don't have to actually say anything about yourself. And I was like, oh, my God, Colette's so funny. And it's like, you absolutely know nothing about Colette because she just came in there and, like, told a bunch of jokes.
You start doing material.
Exactly.
And you don't have to listen to them and their hateful shit that comes out of their mouth.
You are controlling the conversation, right? Because you're the one who's leading with the jokes and managing the emotions of the room. So you know it's not going to get to a dark place because you're the ones who like keeps keeping up the hilarity.
Now, I'm interested in hearing about it because you're working on a project now where you're going to talk about sexual assault, but you're going to do it in a comedic way.
Yeah, I'm working with an organization. I'm not going to say their name because I haven't gotten that cleared. But we do sexual assault training on college campuses. So we're gearing up for our big season of college orientation season. And so we go on a college campus and we do a 30-minute show, which is followed by a 30-minute facilitation of conversation on sexual assault, and it involves improv and it involves comedy. The comedy comes from just kind of acknowledging the tension and be like, yeah, so you guys are about to talk about rape. Like, I bet your buttholes are like, you know, all tensed up, you know. And so just the comedy comes from recognizing that tension that that is universal, which is what all comedy really comes from. So we're like not making jokes about the actual situation, but or actual rape, I would say, or assault. But we're making jokes about like how our society talks about sex or doesn't talk about sex. And we make jokes about like, did you get abstinence only education or did you just, you know, all they told you was STDs. So, you know, you're going to get like from having sex STDs or STBs. Sexually translated babies, transmitted babies. So we're making jokes about things like that just to like get people to open up their ears and like be welcoming to having these conversations, which are so difficult.
Because nobody wants to be nagged.
No.
And so they want to have it like presented information in a, you know, in a fun way.
Yeah. Like,
well,
one
nagging
of the things,
doesn't work.
No, no, exactly. Like one of the things that
unless
we really
you do it slowly over time for a long period.
It doesn't work. We've talked about this extensively.
But yeah, one of the things that we'll do, we're like, guys, like who came in here today and we're like, oh my God, we're going to talk about rape. Everyone's going to make me, you know, everyone's going to be looking at me as a guy. Like, I'm not going to feel comfortable. And we then say to them, like, you know, guys, there's only a small percentage of men who commit rape. And unfortunately, those men do it over and over again. And so we want to say, like, you know, chill out. We know that you guys most likely are not rapists. Like, this is a cool place to be. But we want to focus on those people who do elicit those behaviors.
And so they might become victims themselves.
And we definitely talk about that well. And we talk about, like, what are tools that people use? You know, one of the things is like the second most common iteration of rape is a group of heterosexual men or one heterosexual man on another man who identifies as heterosexual. And it happens under the guise of hazing. Right. And is all hazing sexual assault? No. But, you know, if it gets unchecked and there's optics involved and penetration and you know, making fun of people's genitals, it gets to that point. So just having like real conversations and using words that people are scared about using on a regular basis. So you got to loosen them up with comedy before you get there.
So Colette, you're a black woman, you're an entertainer, you're developing your own brand. Mm-hmm. You want what kind of animated GIFs should I use of you?
Oh my god.
To respond to people. Can mm-hmm. we just can I have my camera here?
Can we just put a big salad in front of you? Will that work?
Right in front of my salad? Are you serious? Right in front of my salad. So there's definitely the I wish that I was the right in front of my salad lady.
Ms. Romaine.
Ms. Romaine, yes. She's known in the
streets. For people who are not familiar with that, quickly explain that.
So there's a little video going around, I think especially like on Facebook and Twitter, and it was an outtake from a men.com video.
It's a porn
video. It's a porn video, and men.com is famous for kind of having like guys in suits having sex with mm-hmm. each other, and they do some of the other things. But you know, a lot of porn, they've really discovered that humor can kind of really sell stuff. Mm-hmm. That people want to laugh at their porn sometimes, or at least have an awkward setup. So it's this little twink, muscle twink in the kitchen, and he's basically getting screwed from behind by this, you know, bearded muscle daddy.
And they're both wearing aprons.
They're shirtless.
One it looks like a scene from Cooking with Drag Queens.
Yeah, basically. And then there's an African-American woman there, and she's sitting there with this monstrous bowl in front of her, and she's eating the salad, and like she's like, are you guys fucking? Oh my god. Right in front of my salad. And she's, you know, disgusted, and she throws the fork down, and she just walks off. Mm-hmm.
Who is she? Like in the porn video?
They say that she. I don't know. I guess she's a friend or something like that. But they call her like Ms. Romaine because of the lettuce, you know. And I guess she was somebody they hired. One of the porn actors. She's like, I'm not really who she is. Mm-hmm. You know, of course it's in a porno, so she's not going to use her real name. Mm-hmm. But I guess they reached out to her, and she's going to make an appearance again
on Ellen.
Can't wait. Right after the dance.
Right in front of my salad.
Salad? Yeah, you know, a girl can dream to go borrow, like, the right in front of my salad lady one day. Yeah, I don't know it. My gift would be...
All right, Colette, I'll take my... I'll have sex in front of you in front of a salad.
Oh, my God. Best day ever.
What kind of salad dressing you want?
Oh, I want goat cheese, and I want candied walnuts. And then, like, probably honey mustard. Oh, my God, what have I done? Right in front of my salad.
Here's some ranch. It's cool and fresh.
What have I done? What have I signed up for? Picks later, guys. Check the website. Check the Facebook.
we have to get some gifts of you. How indignant can you look right now?
Well, that's the thing. Like, so you're putting things out there, mm-hmm. and basically, you know, the reason I started talking about that quote from Dreamgirls is like, you know, as entertainers, we think we have this romantic idea that we're going to have a swimming mm-hmm. pool and. You know, and I think popular culture reinforces that, mm-hmm. that you become successful, you use a crib, MTV mm-hmm. Cribs, right?
Yeah.
This beautiful house.
Keeping up with the Kardashians.
And, you have a gorgeous house, you have servants, mm-hmm. you're a king. Mm-hmm. But wake up, baby, because the star is a slave. And mm-hmm. you're indentured to the creating content mm-hmm. that compromises you as a person, as a human being, just by the very nature of creating something that's out there that someone else can use against you and your interests.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think like a lot of these entertainers who are showing up in these GIFs, you know, they are now trying to monetize it by having their own like emoji keyboard. So I say more power to you. Try to get power back from your brand. Try to get your autonomy back. Try to get your coins.
So is it okay to put up fucked up shit out there as long as you're making money off of it? Is that right?
So what I'm saying is make sure you're giving credit to, I mean, that's just the same conversation with like appropriation, right? Make sure mm-hmm. you're giving credit or giving credence or giving money back to those people that it's taking from, right? So, you know, if you're in conversation with them, if you actually have black friends, or if you really enjoy something from someone, don't steal it. Make sure that you're somehow giving them, reimbursing them for their services.
It's interesting because I've observed that in entertainment, and especially when the entertainer gets more and more successful, it is this vicious, never-ending need for content. Mm. And I've observed, like, you know, The Simpsons stealing jokes from Devin Green, or I've seen Saturday Night Live.
Pulled pork.
What
was it? Let's hear it for pulled pork,
and they did basically a food blog. It was almost the same idea. And it was really weird to see these kind of, you know, big corporate money making comedy machines mm-hmm. Borrow stuff from the little guy. And you see this all. Another example is Jackie Beats and Selena Luna's what is it, high fructose corn syrup ads that Saturday Night Live completely ripped off. And I start observing this kind of power structure, right? And is it part of our copyright system? Are we just like messed up as a society that it's like we can't have this organic process of building culture on someone else without oppressing them inherently so?
I mean, I think it is part of ego. You know, who knows? You're looking at it as like The Simpsons as this entity, but there was probably some writer on that show who's getting pressure to come up with content, and they stole either inadvertently or on purpose from other people. So I think it's hard because there is this pressure to like produce, but just pay those people. If you think somebody's funny, then get them a job on the writing staff. Exactly. You don't deserve to be on that writing staff if you can't every week produce what you need to write. So give that person a job because apparently you think that they're funny.
But maybe that person doesn't have the ability to hire. They're low on the totem pole themselves, and they're pitching this idea, hoping nobody noticed that they just ripped it off of a viral video.
Then they're trifling.
Yeah.
Yeah. You stole.
And when was, you know, writers' rooms are full of people who are hacking it up or faking it till they make it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. It's scary. And it sucks when you're the person who gets, you know, material stolen from. That's something that happens at all levels in the industry. You know, I know people who are in the comedy community in Chicago writing sketches and have had them stolen. I won't say who and where, but had them stolen by bigger entities. So they were there as a student. And then one day they saw one of their sketches up in a touring show for a company. So it happens in all levels.
Remember, folks,
who else would it be?
Remember, folks, a drag queen is anyone who. What is it that a drag queen does?
Oh,
drag
queen. I don't know. Why don't you ask RuPaul? It's her quote, isn't it?
Yeah. A drag queen is anyone who transformed themselves into a beautiful creature of their own imagination. Obama Day is now a holiday in Illinois.
I didn't know that. It sure is.
Is it his birthday?
I believe so. So happy Obama Day, but it's not in Hawaii, in Illinois.
Okay. Or Kenya?
Not in Kenya.
You stole my joke. I was about to say that. I wasn't fast enough.
Sorry.
Congratulations, Obama. They should call that Thanks Obama
Day.
Did
you see Malia coming off of Lollapalooza?
Oh, my God. Why was she thrashing on the floor like that?
I don't know, but whatever drugs she had, it was pretty good.
Malia, you know you black girl. You can't be doing everything everybody else do.
She's got the Secret Service all around her.
Well, they were not keeping her services secret. They were not doing their job. Because everybody saw her services.
They had her on a golf cart leaving the place, and she looked like she was just kind of like she was down a little bit with her head down.
She was at Lollapalooza here too.
Yeah, she's been going for the past
Because she was like last year she was twerking with her booty shorts on, and that made the internet. She had learned her lesson. I don't know why Michelle let her go out there. Yeah, smoking pot and then dancing with booty shorts.
She's a kid. That's what kids do.
She is set for life.
She ain't got my mama. No, it would have been a Lollapalooza for me the next. She's seen that one video. No.
Last time you were here, we were talking about a controversy that was just starting to bubble up.
We didn't actually talk about it.
We didn't.
No, we did a Pride show with Colette, and we're talking about surviving Pride. And then as soon as we got done recording, something came up about the Philadelphia.
We started having conversation.
We had a conversation post-show about the rainbow and how Philadelphia added the black and brown rainbow to it. And
stripes to the rainbow.
And we kind of looked at it like, well, I get it, but visually, I don't know how it kind of looks, if that looks okay. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the next couple weeks, it just kind of blew up and it was everywhere.
So now Australia has, I guess a community center in Australia has decided to go that same route. Mm-hmm. But of course they're like, let me show you how it's done, girl.
Except in the Australian accent.
With an Australian accent, yeah. And so they put a brown stripe and a black stripe on the purple side of the flag, which visually blends better. Mm-hmm. And then they put a pink stripe on the top to create more of a neon cat effect of rainbow magic. And it actually looks great. So everybody wins in the sense like the purists get a prism-like effect. The people who want to have be inclusive, you get your brown and your black stripe. Mm-hmm. And the people who want to go a little old school, it's a nod to the original mm-hmm. pride flag that had a pink stripe. Mm-hmm. So everybody wins.
And the original, the ones, that it was kind of like based on chakra, wasn't it, in some way?
It was some hippie who was smoking too much pot. But yeah, it was the idea was the chakra system.
And people are always saying, well, you know, the original rainbow flag was very inclusive. But, you know, our perspectives on life change. And now, you know, race is a big issue for us now. And so it's something that we include in those kinds of things. And it's not every pride flag has to look like that. But if you want to embrace that, you embrace it.
Honey, all I can say is my wristwatch has six stripes. I don't see a...
We can draw one on. Let's just draw.
I got you.
We can put a little
pull
black
out
ribbon,
a sharper.
Little, yeah, Sharpie.
A little Sharpie.
I do like the cleanliness of the original design, though. It's there's an aesthetic quality to its simplicity.
What's the rainbow?
It's also symmetrical with the six stripes.
Look at old Roy G. Biv, you know.
Mm-hmm. And then you start adding. I don't know. I'm sure I can. I imagine that. It's about a merchandising thing, mm-hmm. right? So if having that black and brown stripe and a pink stripe on the top sells more flags and wristwatch bands and bumper stickers, mm-hmm. you better believe, honey.
Right? Because you already got that one. You already have the original one, so you got to
come up
with the new one, right? You got to always be creating new things. It's just like the writing room. I think that the pride flag is always, there's always been different iterations of the pride flag, mm-hmm. which is why it was so crazy to me that people were so upset about the Philly one. You know, like people were acting like it was this like sacred monument. Mm-hmm. And it's like, there's always been different iterations for people of color, for trans people, like
leather folks.
Everybody had their own little flag. So like
BDSM.
Chill. Yeah.
And
chill.
The Bears are now mad because their brown striped flag has been co-opted by...
Oh my God.
Just give them a sandwich. Uh-huh. They'll be okay.
Yeah. All you can eat pizza buffet over here. They're like,
they just hungry.
What?
Yeah. Low blood sugar.
So Kate Blanchett is set to play Lucille Ball in an Amazon biopic that's endorsed by Lucille Ball's kids. So isn't that exciting?
Deborah Messing?
I'm surprised Deborah Messing isn't in it. Yeah,
she does kind of look like her, for sure. But, you know, Kate Blanchett, who's got more star power, really?
But, like, has anyone ever been like, oh, my God, Kate Blanchett is so funny? Like, I don't think that phrase has ever been.
You know, the thing with Lucy, though, is, like, you know, when she first started in Hollywood, she didn't want to be a comedian. Mm-hmm. She thought of herself as, like, you know, like a beautiful little starlet. And mm-hmm. she really wanted, you know, she
was a sex symbol.
A sex mm-hmm. symbol. She wanted, you know, she was best friends with Carol Lombard, who was mm-hmm. considered the beauty of the day. And so she really thought she was an elegant, beautiful woman. Mm-hmm. But the roles for that just didn't kind of come to her. Mm-hmm. So she kind of, like, turned to comedy. And it wasn't, mm-hmm. you know, she had been performing a long time before the Lucille Ball show even came along. Mm-hmm. And I guess, you know, they had really good writers for that show. And then later on, when she did her other Lucy shows, she'd learned a thing or two about comedy. Mm-hmm. And her original writers for her, the first show that she did without Desi, I guess, were terrible. She didn't think it was funny at all. So she would actually, like, improve the scripts and help develop them. Mm-hmm. So it was something she kind of learned to do a bit over time. Mm-hmm. But also what's interesting, too, is in New York State now, they have a National Comedy Center in her hometown, in Johnstown.
Oh, didn't they have that scary statue?
Jamestown. They did have the Ugly Lucy.
Oh, my God. That thing was frightening children in the streets. Ugh.
It was really weird. Mm-hmm. It was like,
they fixed it, though.
They fixed it. Well, they didn't fix it. They got rid of it.
Yeah.
They put a new statue.
Yeah. So I don't know what happened to the other one.
Well, they had Olga out there looking crazy.
I know. Her lips and her eyes and her face were all just kind of weird. Mm-hmm. And the one artist that made it was just kind of like, you know, I worked from photos and stuff, and I'm sorry that people don't think that she's beautiful.
I fucked up. I'm sorry.
Yeah, just admit defeat. Yeah. Well, she was one of the first female moguls. You know, speaking of people creating a brand, she created this niche for herself, and she was running her own television show back when that really wasn't happening for women. So I hope that Kate Blanchett, like, does her service. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure she will. Yeah. She's an amazing actress.
She has amazing skin, too. Oh, my God, Kate Blanchett's skin.
And those cheekbones.
Mm-hmm. Who will play you in the film of your life?
Who will play me? Chris Pratt.
And he's single now, too.
Yeah, everybody's so excited about Chris really? Pratt. But the reason that he's single is because he's fucking everybody in Hollywood.
Allegedly.
And he's
insufferable.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
You can't be letting your man get hot. You gotta keep him fed and keep him in the house.
What is that song? If you want to be happy for the rest of your life, never make a pretty woman your wife.
Yeah.
Or Chris Pratt
your wife.
That's the phrase.
Colette Gregory, people can check you out where soon?
Yeah, I have another show this Friday. It's at Second City.
Do you want me to take that reference out to Second City?
it's based on a TLC show. It's an improv show. So that's a lot of fun.
What's the TLC show?
So it's about like all those TLC like specials, those crazy specials. Let me get that.
The Learning Channel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, back.
Where
yeah.
you don't. What do you learn on the Learning Channel?
You learn shit. You learn that Honey Boo Boo's family is fucked up.
I know.
That's what you.
So it's called My Strange Half Ton Mermaid Addiction Plus 8. So it's an improvised TLC show. My Strange Half Ton Mermaid Addiction Plus 8. And that's Friday at 8:30 at Second City. And yeah, you give us what our strange addiction is, and we make it funny for you.
Oh,
that's good. That's funny. Like, I can't stop eating the sofa cushion.
Would exactly. Dicks be a strange addiction or not?
No, that's a beautiful one.
Honey, when it comes to your addiction, it's going to be mighty addiction. Strange.
Yes.
Last but not least, a major scientific breakthrough has happened in the field of HIV researchers. Hmm. They managed to create HIV-resistant cells in the human body.
Ooh.
So right now, that's not quite a cure, but it's leading to new types of therapies that can sort of take over the antiviral medications like Truvada that people are taking today. And so, it's really cutting edge right now research that's happening, and it's literally breaking news today. So,
awesome.
You always hear it first.
We're going to see a cure in our lifetimes, I believe it, because it's just the advancements keep coming with PrEP and everything like faster and faster. So,
well, man, it's like I know a lot of people who are in PrEP who would be HIV positive if it wasn't for PrEP.
Sure.
And, I know a lot of people who just like they became HIV positive the year before PrEP was announced. And they're just like, God damn it.
I know people that zero converted too, and they're like, I don't want to go on PrEP because I don't want to have to deal with like the side effects. And it's just like, well, if you get HIV, you're going to get the side effects anyway, so you might as well take it. And then, you know, a year later, they have HIV.
And PrEP don't do shit. Like, I mean, I'm sorry, in terms of side effects.
Yeah.
For some people, though, like if you have like kidney problems, so you have to go see your doctor, you have to get checked for things. And also, too, the science is out there saying that there's been a, we thought there'd be an explosion in STIs because all these people are having unprotected sex, but actually with chlamydia and gonorrhea it's actually gone lower because people are getting checked more often. Take care of your health, folks.
Yes,
that's right, folks. We want to remind you that Feast of Fun would be possible, is possible, because of financial support of fantastic, fabulous people like you. Go to feastoffun.com/donate and make a one-time donation or access 14 years of 13. Podcasting.
Well, since we started in 2005.
Now, when we first started podcasting, it was done by other people, not us, because I'm not that old. And so couldn't possibly be me in the show in the early days.
And I was just getting out of eighth grade.
Yeah, so.
I wasn't even born yet.
Because I was doing the math on what my fake age is. And so I started podcasting when I was 18 years old. It's amazing how, you know.
You were so
the
wise.
The time flies. I was so wise. Yeah. It's really amazing.
It's been
amazing.
A long journey.
So we're still around here, honey. We watched them fall, rise and fall many times.
Yes.
And we'll still be around. And so we're here because of financial support of fabulous people like you. We would not be able to do this show. And you can walk through our journey. If you become a Plus member and start downloading all our shows, you'll have podcasts. You could listen to every single podcast we ever made. It would take about, 2,000 hours?
23,000 hours.
Yeah.
Wow.
23,000 hours in days is, it would take you about 100 days to listen to every podcast we've ever made. Yeah.
So like, yeah, a third of a year.
But you'd never be able to, you couldn't stay awake.
You couldn't stay awake. Or you'd be like, wake up, Mark's making a comment about dicks.
I want to remind folks too that we have a store, feastoffun.com/store, and you get t-shirts there. Celebrate who you are in fine fashion.
Yes, visit our chic boutique at feastoffun.com/store.
And where can people find you? Is it Twitter, Facebook? What's the best
Facebook
route?
Facebook and Twitter. My Twitter is Coco Therapy, because my nickname's Coco.
C-O-C-O?
C-O-C-O-A.
Coco from fame, or just,
yes,
just Coco?
Just because I'm Colette, so okay. Yeah.
That's okay. A good one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm sweet and chocolate, so.
And quite delightful.
Thank you.
Thank you, Coco.
Always a pleasure, gentlemen.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye. Bye.